This is Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard.
Susie Favor Hamilton is a brand name in Wisconsin. Hamilton grew up in Stevens Point and was a star runner at UW-Madison for years before going on to become a three-time Olympian. In Wisconsin, she had a reputation as being an all-American girl and a local hero.
After her running career ended, Hamilton became a realtor and seemed to have settled into a domestic life with her husband and young daughter in Madison. Then the news broke that things weren't exactly what they seemed, and Hamilton was living a double life as an escort in Las Vegas and flying there regularly to see clients.
She writes about that time in her life in the new memoir co-written by Sarah Tomlinson. It's called Fast Girl, A Life Spent Running from Mental Illness. Today, Hamilton talks openly about how the experience led her to a diagnosis of bipolar disorder, a mental illness that runs in her family.
Susie Favor Hamilton joins us now. Susie, welcome to Central Time.
Well, thank you. Great to be on your show. Thanks for having me.
Well, Susie, we ask this of authors all the time, but not all books tell the deeply kind of personal story that yours does. Why did you decide that you wanted to write this book?
You know, first of all, it was a very difficult book to write, and it took me a good 2 years to be able to tell the story, to just get healthy enough to explain it. I wanted to tell this story because there was a lot of speculation on how I got to this point in my life when my first story, when it first came out. And I guess I wanted to be the one who told the narrative. I wanted to get the story straight. And again, it was a hard process and something that I thought maybe I shouldn't go through with this. But now in hindsight, with all the letters I've received and emails and text messages from people saying that they lived my story, or they're living my story. They can't speak out about it. The sex is taboo to even talk to their psychologist about it. And people have even written to me saying that I saved their life. So by knowing I saved just one life, I know this story is worth telling.
I want to start where your book starts, with your beginning, your childhood in Stevens Point, and growing up. One of your brothers, Dan, had mental illness, and your family just didn't talk about it very much. How did that affect you?
Well, I had one older brother, and you know, back then I was born in 1968, so growing up back in the 70s and the 80s. It was more portrayed, we watched the Brady Bunch on TV. You know, people kind of live that image on the outside. No family is perfect, and none of the families in Stevens Point were perfect. None of them anywhere are perfect. But I think for us, because of the chaos with my brother and his bipolar, you want to hide that. You want to protect. My parents wanted to protect my three sisters, my two sisters and myself. It was easier not to talk about the pain. And sometimes people aren't capable of going to a place where it's painful. And I think it was extremely painful for my parents. And again, they just wanted to shield me. The illness was so misunderstood. There was such a stigma attached to it. And unfortunately, being silent with this illness causes a more stigma to it.
Now, it was in Stevens Point that you first discovered running, and you write so vividly about the joy that you felt when you discovered that you could really run. What did it feel like, that first discovery of running and what you could do?
It's such a great question for me, because I still relive that moment, especially when you ask that question. I'm living it at this exact moment. And, you know, it was just me, my body, my mind being free. And the happiness that just filled every inch of my body, whereas as I got older, the pressure started to weigh on my shoulder. And it wasn't as fun anymore. And as I moved up from high school to college to the Olympic level, it seemed like that love of running was being pulled out of me more and more. And it's not anybody's fault. It was more the way I handled the anxiety. I don't think I was capable of knowing how to handle it. I think a lot of my mental illness was contributed to that, and the way, the outlook on how I saw things. I didn't see it healthy.
Now, you were a runner at UW-Madison, and during that time, you were bulimic, and you were kind of obsessive, you write, about winning. You wanted to win at all costs. Did you have any clue then that you had some mental health issues that you maybe hadn't dealt with yet?
It's kind of funny when you say kind of obsessive, because I was extremely obsessive about my training. That was what I programmed myself at such an early age, to be this runner, to be the Olympic runner. Didn't have balance in my life. So my eating disorder became something I had control of in my life. And I just obsessed about being the best. And my study, my grades, everything got overlooked. And I became the runner. And teachers just slowly kind of passed me through classes that I was failing. And I, in my own mind, thought, well, I'm just supposed to be a runner. Everything else doesn't really matter. Just make the state proud and become that Olympian. These were the thoughts that were going through my mind, very distorted.
We're talking now with Susie Favor Hamilton. She's the author of the new memoir with Sarah Tomlinson. It's called Fast Girl, A Life Spent Running from Madness. And Susie, let's go fast forward now. Your Olympic career, you have, you're a three-time Olympian, but that's behind you now. You're a mother, you have a young daughter, you're a wife, you're a realtor. But at that time, you also started to want to take some pretty big risks to get an adrenaline rush. Was that at that time, was that a new urge for you, the need to have these intense experiences?
I think once, for me, what happened going into the real world after sports was difficult. I didn't want to be in my sport. Like a lot of athletes have a hard time from that transition because they miss their sport. I wanted out of my sport. I was tired of the drugs. I was tired of training so hard and never making it. Because I was competing against so many athletes on drugs, it was disappointing. And that took me, that was a great relief. But then once I became a mother and started real estate, I really struggled. And I suffered from depression, is what they thought. So I was misdiagnosed and I was given a drug called Zoloft, which people are very, very well and well known. That drug in most people causes actually a less of a sex drive. And for me, things changed dramatically when I took that drug. Within 2 months, I look back on that drug now and see myself starting to take on a whole different personality.
And so with that backdrop, you're on Zoloft, and you decided to one way that you could satisfy this new part of your personality that was emerging was to become an escort in Las Vegas. You were paid a lot of money to have sex with your clients. What did you get about of living that life as an elite escort in Las Vegas that you didn't have in, your quote-unquote real life in Madison?
Well, I think, first of all, from the point where I started the Zoloft to go through this sexual exploration to become an escort was an eight-month process. And what I did was, it was a slow, my husband and I, obviously, we had more of a open relationship. We were more sexually liberal.
And he knew about this.
He knew about it, but he didn't like it one bit. And I had grown up very repressed. All I did was focus on that one thing, running and running fast. I didn't live a life like most kids do, where they party, they experiment with sex. I didn't do any of that. And I was repressed. And there was a part of me throughout this whole process that was rebelling and so desperately wanting to be that bad girl. Because I think there was a part of me that was created, and everybody looked upon me in the state as the perfect girl, the perfect role model. I was, the blonde, bubbly, she could do no wrong. And it was an image that was created for me. I was never a perfect person. I had so many faults, but I went along with that. So when I was able to be free from all that and go into this exploration, I realized that a part of that was real, but it was also because of the Zoloft that contributed to going in that route. I never would have gone that route, I totally believe, if I wasn't on the Zoloft that made me hypersexual. Because of being bipolar, Zoloft and bipolar together can bring on hypersexuality.
just to look at that part of the sliver of it that you say was real, I was thinking your sexuality, it had been kind of managed before. Your coaches felt that they could tell you not to have sex before a competition. Your father got upset when you did a swimsuit calendar. There were issues of shame around your breast size when you were running early on. Do you think at some level, part of this, aside from the mental illness, may have been that you hadn't always felt in charge of your own body before?
Absolutely. Huge insecurity in the way I looked. With an eating disorder, and like you said, with my breasts, I was this runner who didn't look like all the other girls. I had big boobs, and I had this reminder. I had a college coach on the men's team who was filming my breasts when I was training. I found this out from a male athlete. I also had a woman write into my coach telling me I should wear two jog bras when I run so my boobs wouldn't bounce. I had people in society telling me how I should look. You know, looking back at them, I look at, what the heck? Who are these people to tell me how I should look? How insensitive, how inappropriate it was. But yet society feels that need to do that. And society now, when my story came out, felt the need to shame me without knowing my story. And their shame almost killed me. I made the decision to go the route I did. I was perfectly well aware of the choice I made to go into being an escort. At that time in my life, it fueled my mania. It became everything. I lost maternal instinct. I lost the fact that I was a wife. As much as my husband kept telling me, you're going to get caught, you need to stop, I wouldn't stop. I didn't want to. It was a drug. It was like ecstasy. I never did cocaine, but I'm sure if I did, it would have been just like cocaine, never wanting to stop. And I took some bad routes, and I made bad decisions, risky behavior that was ultimately going to take my life.
Susie Faver-Hamilton is with us now. She's a Wisconsin native and a three-time Olympian for women's middle distance running. She's the author of the new memoir, Fast Girl, Life Spent Running from Madness.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert.
We pick up our conversation now with former Olympian Susie Faver-Hamilton. She was born in Stevens Point, went to college at UW-Madison, where she had a huge following as a runner. She's a three-time Olympian for women's middle distance running.
Hamilton lived a secret double life for a while as a paid escort in Las Vegas and kept it secret until her identity was revealed online. The moment led to her diagnosis of bipolar disorder, and today she's a speaker on issues like mental illness, bulimia, and the struggles that athletes face. Her new memoir with Sarah Tomlinson is called Fast Girl. And Susie, I want to come back to something you said. You said you were perfectly aware of these risks that you were taking, and there was so much at stake, your reputation, your family, arguably your own safety. What was going through your mind about why these risks were okay to take at the time?
I didn't have a ceiling to whatever I was doing. These risks at the time didn't, in my mind, seem risky. They seemed completely normal, and I think what happened was my brain got so distorted and delusional that I couldn't see correctly. I couldn't see right from wrong. And if somebody said, here, do these drugs, it will just enhance the experience, I was like, sure. I had no ceiling. And it's bizarre looking back on that behavior. Even though I knew I was having sex for money, I didn't see any ramifications from it. I believed I never would get caught. I would never be found out. Nobody would ever know. And that I attribute to bipolar. If you look under signs of bipolar, all of the risky behavior is a sign. This endless energy that I had, I do attribute having bipolar even at a younger age. I think that was something that drove me to be such a good runner.
And when did you realize that what was happening to you was more than it seemed, that it was the result, as you say, of mental illness?
I was shocked when I was first diagnosed. It was about 2 weeks after I was outed, which the guy ended up saving my life by outing me. But I was completely shocked. The fact that my brother had it, I never saw any of these signs that I had it. And, you know, for a while I was in denial of all of this. I was taking medications right away after they diagnosed me, but my behavior was completely the same. Nothing had changed in me when they diagnosed me as bipolar. I probably should have been hospitalized at that time and looking back, but I think people need to be well aware when something is so odd and doesn't look right, there's something deeper. And for me, there were deeper issues that took time to get out. And you can diagnose the illness, but you can't immediately treat the behavior unless I was in some type of counseling facility where I couldn't be in my damaging environment, where I was just continuing to hurt myself.
And you did get the treatment that you needed, even though you wrote that that year after the diagnosis was the hardest one. But to look at where you are right now, I mean, so much is in the open for you, your mental illness, your past, your life post-diagnosis. How do you feel these days in your own skin?
You know, Wisconsin got to be too much of a fishbowl for me because of all of this, the ordeal. I have to say, though, Madison, the people were amazing. I didn't feel judgment at all. I felt compassion. But it was still difficult for me. There were a lot of triggers there. And moving out now to California and being a couple blocks from the ocean, there's something so therapeutic about the ocean and just jumping in. That's been great therapy. I'm in a place where nobody knows who you are. Nobody cares who you are. I'm just free of there's less triggers in my life. I'm very, very fortunate to have been able to move out here and have that, where a lot of people aren't, and they're still struggling with these triggers in their life and how to cope with them. For me, coping now, instead of being an escort in Vegas, you know, that was my escape. Today, now, it's climbing and hiking mountains, or it's doing exercise, biking, swimming, running. That's what's really helping to keep me grounded. And, of course, the medication.
Well, Susie, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And I hope people understand by me telling this story and telling, I do talk about the sex in this story because I want people to recognize how destructive the behavior looks. What does bipolar look like? And what can we do to help people struggling with this? First of all, the main thing is we can be there to support, show hope, and look at the disease, not the behavior.
And we leave it there. Susie, thank you so much again. Appreciate that. That was Susie Favor-Hamilton, 3-time Olympian for women's middle distance running. She's the author of the new memoir with Sarah Tomlinson of the book Fast Girl, Life Spent Running from Madness.